California television channel CW6 reported on it. And when Jim Patton said, quote unquote, "I love this little girl," saying, "Alexa, order me a dollhouse," it actually triggered a bunch of people's Amazon Echoes and Dots to order other dollhouses. And evidently, like, quite a few of them. So that's actually kind of funny.
This is Bad Voltage Season 2, Episode 1. Yes.
Ooh. That was a long, long first season, by the way.
It was a very long season.
That was a long season.
Now, we did debate after Brian left us in the last show whether we're starting a new year. Should we say this here is a new series, Season 2, Episode 1? And there were lots of things that went into that decision, but I think one of them was the fact that people kept saying to me, why are the shows all called 1X82? That's ridiculous. You're never going to stop the first season. And so now we have. So, ha, 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 everyone who said I wasn't going to do that.
We basically make decisions based on spite.
we do. I've literally cut off my nose at this point. But yes, so I'm Stuart Langridge. With me are Jeremy Garcia and a not very well John O'Bacon.
Yes, yeah. I have Zika, everyone.
You do not have Zika.
Also known as a cold. I'm not feeling too bad right now, but that's because I've drunk a giant bucket of coffee before recording this.
Okay. So John has Zika, that ha 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 is the happiest you'll hear Ack for the duration of the show. But I'm so far having a great 2017, so I seem to be the only one.
Right, yeah. No, he's quite miserable. So we're going to, on this show, talk about our predictions for 2017. We're going to get into, we had varying degrees of success in our predictions for 2016. Jeremy is going to remind us repeatedly how he's way better at this than the rest of us. But we're going to talk about predictions covering all manner of different things, computers, cars, everything. So, yes, we'll get into that.
Yep. We're going to review Jono's new car. Jono's gone out and bought a Cadillac. Can you believe it? And so we're interested.
It's a great car.
We're interested in the technology inside it, and where the baby seat goes. So we'll hear about that.
And we're also kind of going to, I'd say, intro a segment that we're probably, I think, going to do moving forward based on this one. And that's just a little bit of the news, maybe about a 5 to 8 minute segment in general, where we each come up with a new segment and then the rest of us can discuss what we think of it.
And this is a bit of a theme, actually. One of the things you're going to notice, when, as Ack mentioned earlier on, obviously Brian moved on to Passage New in the last show, and all the best to Brian for the future.
Yes.
And we decided, with the start of season two, why don't we just kind of rejig things a little bit and think about approaching the show in a slightly different way? So this means two things. One is we're planning on having a bunch of guest presenters moving forward, just to try it and play with it. We're going to do maybe a few shows with just the three of us, first of all, but we're going to have some guest presenters in the future because people seem to enjoy it when people come on, but not like typical interviews. They'll actually be on the show. But we're also going to just fiddle with the format a little bit. We're going to try the new segment. We're going to try some of the types of segments. So importantly, let us know what you think. If you like it, if you like certain types of segments, if you don't like certain types of segments, let us know. You can either email us at show@badvoltage.org or you can leave comments on the forum at community.badvoltage.org as well.
And now, season two of Bad Voltage. So as last episode we kind of reviewed our predictions for 2016, and as this is the first show of 2017, what we're going to do, as usual, is our predictions for this year. What we're going to do that's a little bit different than in years past, however, is in the last years we did them either broken up into different shows or as all one kind of bonewig segment. This time we're going to break it up into three different segments and kind of intersperse it throughout the show. So first up, we're going to have, let's go with Ack, give his predictions for 2017.
Okay, now, to be clear, I have a little preamble here first, which is, There are two caveats to this. The first one is that the whole technology world basically annoys me at the moment, right? There's nothing good going on and a bunch of terrible things going on. So my predictions tend to have a slightly downward slant. And
well, it's good because the technology world doesn't like you either. So the feeling's mutual.
There you go. The feeling is entirely mutual. And the second thing is, last year I was told go big or go home, and I went big and I should have gone home, given the appalling plane crash that was me scoring a big round 0 points last year. So slightly more conservative this year, perhaps. But yes, so the first one, there's been a lot of news about the Amazon Echo and similar devices, Google Home and so on and so forth. There was, I watched a very amusing Twitch video the other day where someone had two Google Homes next to one another and then just set them going and put them on Twitch. And they ended up having a big conversation and quoting lyrics from Journey songs at one another. It was... Honestly, and then one of them was like,
"The future
do you
is
love
here.
Me?" And the other one went, "I don't know if I love you." And the other one said, "Why do you not think that you love me?" It was watching two Elizas talk to one another. It was mad. Anyway, so prediction number one, I am expecting to see this year someone actually get compromised by a direct attack via an Amazon Echo or something similar like a Google Home. So this is not someone hacking the back end data, right? This is someone working out a way of putting code onto your Echo or onto everyone's Echo, which targets you. So you'll say something like, you know, Amazon, buy toilet roll. And it'll say, and it'll respond with something like, please verify your account number. Please read your account number down. You'll read your account number, at which point it gets sent off to like evil.ru or something. So this kind of direct attack via a Home or an Echo or something like that. What'll happen is it'll get mountains of press and there'll be a drop in sales. And that will be a measurable drop in sales for this kind of device, but it'll be a temporary drop in sales for a month or so, and then by the end of the year, everyone will be like, yeah, whatever, yeah, I'm sure I remember that happening. And that will be it. So that's my first prediction. That's going to happen this year. Actual direct attacks. And it's basically an attack on people's naivety. This is not an attack on the technology. This is something like phishing. In the, it's basically the auditory equivalent of phishing, I think.
Right. Okay. All right. It is boring. I'm not going to deny it. That's
given
boring.
Where the technology is headed, it seems inevitable that something along those lines happens. Yep. So that's not really much of a prediction as much as it's saying something that's probably definitely.
Hi! Yeah. the reason I put it in there is, do you not think this would be enormous news if it happened?
No, I think as we've established on the show many, many, many times, some of us care about privacy and we are in the vast, vast, vast minority.
Ah, no, that's not quite what I mean. My point is, this seems like a whole new, I don't want to use the phrase attack vector, but that's what it feels like. This is a whole new way of attacking the way people think. This is not about privacy. Fine, they'll be doing it to steal data or to steal your account details or something like that. But it's the sense that people will see this happening and then just shrug their shoulders, even though it could actually happen to them directly. This is not something like the Mirai botnet where you buy a thing and then Dyn goes down.
Right.
This is a direct attack on someone stealing money out of your wallet and people still won't care.
I mean, it's a little bit macabre to predict, but I would guess that eventually, maybe 2017 is that year, someone will die as a result of one of these things directly. And I don't even think that will change people's opinion.
I
agree.
Jacked up, I think. Right now, the second one.
All right. Second one.
I've been looking at the cloud space, because where everything is, you know, and part of it is watching Jono walk around CES and reading the news comes out and says, consumer technology is just all annoying. And you can do predictions about how it is annoying, right? About how people continue to come up with pointless Internet of Things shit. But
I tell you what, we were a bit worried, you know, what it was going to be like without Brian, but I feel like he's still here.
Shut up, right? But the people you haven't heard from are Oracle, right? And I'm expecting this. I think what's going to happen is something like the MySQL acquisition here, right? We're going to see Oracle do two things this year. One of them is going to be an Oracle-specific thing, and one of them is going to be buying someone who's currently a big household name, you know, Docker or someone like that.
Right? Docker, not a big household name.
A big tech household name in the industry, yes, is who I'm talking about. Not an actual household name, right?
Yeah, okay, not a Coca-Cola, okay.
No, not Coca-Cola, right? And so Oracle do two things. The Oracle thing they do, nobody will care about. It'll die on its ass like HP Cloud or whatever did. And they'll buy someone else, and then 3 years from now, which is the long-term prediction, they'll fuck it up, right? In the same way that they screwed up Hudson, which became Jenkins, in the same way they screwed up MySQL, in the same way they screwed up Sun. But that's not going to happen this year. But this year, they'll be the acquisition. Because Oracle, as far as I can tell, haven't done anything yet, and they've got all the money in the universe and haven't done anything with it.
Well, they were digesting a couple of very, very large acquisitions for a while, but I would agree that they're probably on the acquisition path again.
We're going to see it. But, and as far as I can tell, everything Oracle touched, they break. And nobody cares about their stuff, and that will continue. So that's prediction number two.
I would say that the fact that they are one of the largest software companies in the world would suggest that they do sometimes such things that work well.
I would say if your perspective is open source, many things they do, yes, they break. If your perception is one of making money, then most things they do well. Even if their products are not products people
very
like,
fine
they make mountains of cash.
This is true. So, yeah, so they can do something. And then the third thing is, and this is sort of a web one, I must admit. But I have
is this a bonus prediction?
I've put one. Yeah, this is my bonus prediction.
All right.
And it's a bit technical, so you got to bear with me, right?
All right.
We're going to see Apple put service worker support into Safari, but not in any kind of useful way, right?
What is service worker?
Right. The service worker does two things. It allows you to start delivering an app kind of experience to phones or desktops or whatever without having to go through an app store. So it means that web apps can act like native apps. They can appear on your home screen, work offline, store data, all that kind of thing. But then there's a whole bunch of other stuff which is built on the existence of having them. Things like push notifications and so on and so forth.
Okay, okay.
Right. So Apple so far haven't done it and haven't committed to doing it, and everyone else has. I think they'll do it because they'll give in to the pressure, but they'll do it in such a way that you can't do what everyone actually wants, which is to be able to deliver apps to iPhones without tithing 30% of your money to Apple. Okay. So you'll hear a bunch of Chrome people point out the fact that, okay, yes, you've done it, but you haven't actually done it in a meaningful way.
Okay.
And that will have happened by the end of the year. But it will at least be a move from Apple.
Yeah, again, bit boring, isn't it?
Well, I have technical ones this year because all of my
you are hedging is what you're doing.
No, it's not so much hedging as that trying to predict the rest of the technology world just makes me look at it and go, I wish it would all just die in a fire. I don't care.
That the very conservative set of predictions.
I will say that goose egg really upset you a little bit, didn't it? Because you almost ensured that there will be no goose eggs next year.
Oh, right. My first
prediction is that Stuart Langridge will have a beer in 2017.
Last year I predicted a bunch of big stuff. None of it happened. None of it even looked likely to happen. No. And like everything's going to happen is bad this year, right? Nothing good is going to happen. Name a good thing. I shall wait for your predictions when you predict a bunch of good stuff, and then I will laugh at you 12 months from now when it turns out I was right and you were wrong.
Dude, what happened to you? What happened? You've become an angry, miserable human being. Is this in relation to your daughter moving in?
this week, the role of Brian Lundy will be played by Stuart Langridge. Next week, it's one of your turns.
I was going to say, 2017 Stuart has much more vitriol than the previous iterations.
I know. And we should stick a screwdriver in the side of him and twist it as much as we can to see what comes out.
I am looking forward to hearing yours.
time for the news. Should we do some news?
We shall do some news. Right, my first piece of news. The thing I have, I don't know if you saw this. There was a woman called Bethany Howell, right? She was asleep on the couch in her living room, and her daughter, Ashlyn, who is six, picked up her mum's phone, pressed it against her mum's asleep thumb, which unlocked it, and then bought $250 worth of Pokemon stuff off of Amazon.
Wow.
That is...
I mean, presumably we're supposed to be looking at this and going, oh my God, you see, this is a proper problem for security and the Internet of Things and what have you. But it's just hilarious.
It gives me hope that kids are not as useless as many people are making them out to be.
I also wonder how drunk the mum must have been to not have woken up to this this indiscretion.
Her hand flopping against the phone for 30 right. seconds.
That is, I think this is less a question about technology, more a question about parent.
So it's interesting.
I was just going to point out that having been places with Captain Bacon and had him stay asleep while the hotel burns down around him, I think someone touching your thumb very briefly with an iPhone 7 doesn't seem to register on this kind of thing, right?
No, that reminds me, that's a fair point. There's a documentary about Cannibal Corpse, and one time the guitarist from Cannibal Corpse he slept pretty heavily, apparently. He slept so heavily that they had an accident with the tour bus, and everybody like evacuated, and they were like, where's Rob? And he was still asleep. Wow. Impressive.
As presumably all the rest of the band busied themselves buying XXX Maniac account albums on his Amazon account with his thumb.
Yes. Metal reference. We like that.
So watch out for your kids stealing things with your thumbprint.
So it's not just that, though, because I have a story that's actually pretty related to this. So in Texas, a girl is able to order a $170 dollhouse, and so that's about 140 of your British pounds, and 4 pounds worth of sugar cookies through her Amazon Echo Dot without the mom knowing. And that's not the funny part, because that you think, well, the kid, it is their Echo and whatever stuff happens. But the next morning, California television channel CW6 reported on it. And when Jim Patton said, quote unquote, I love this little girl, saying, Alexa, order me a dollhouse, it actually triggered a bunch of people's Amazon Echoes and Dots to order other dollhouses. And evidently, like, quite a few of them. So that's actually kind of funny.
There's got to be some kind. I mean, obviously, this is a problem. I remember hearing a story years and years and years ago about a Microsoft demo. This is all back in the days of DOS, right? Where they said, and we do speech recognition for commands on the thing, and they were demonstrating up the front. And they said, has anyone got any questions? And someone from the back shouts out, format C colon enter. Right? and then another chap in the audience shouted out, Y enter.
I wonder whether we should actually put into the show, we should just yell out stuff trolling people, like, okay, Google, whatever, whatever. You see, my phone just beeped.
That's a really good idea. So,
funny that your phone just went off.
Okay, Google, subscribe to Bad Voltage.
There we go. Perfect. I have a couple of things to drop into the news. I went to CES recently, which is the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. And I wanted to share what I thought was the coolest thing and the most ridiculous thing that I saw. The coolest thing by miles were in general the TVs. I mean, the TVs are always brilliant at CES, very thin, like all the rest of it. But LG had this huge dome. It's kind of like a tunnel, and they had OLED TVs across like the whole, like just essentially stuck to the top of this dome. It was phenomenal to see, like watching all these TVs glued together and rain pouring and stuff like that. But I also saw an 8K TV, a Samsung Q8K. And it was so high quality. It's like, I'm not sure my eyes are good enough to look at this thing.
So no one supports 4K and we already are moving on to 8K.
I'm hoping that you do think that your eyes can look at that demo video, because that's the only 8K content on the face of the earth. So if you buy this television, you get to just watch that forever.
Yeah.
Why is it a good idea, from your point of view, Baconio, to go into a place where they've just glued loads of tellies to the roof? Why is this cool?
It was just cool to see. It was like being at Disney World. No doubt about it. I mean, it was a complete gimmick.
As my prediction from last show bared out, people love curved screens. That's why.
This can't get enough. It appears to be true.
Yeah.
And then I want to share the I saw a lot of stupid shit at CES, right? CES, for those of you who haven't been there, has the big people like Samsung and LG, and it has loads of, like, you know, Shenzhen Technology Park people who are selling Bluetooth, you know, dongles and whatever else.
And to be fair, if you've never been there, just to set the stage for how stupid things are there, it is the largest conference I've ever seen. It's bigger than some cities.
It's ridiculous. They had... One of the stands had an RV, a full-sized RV, with a helicopter on top of it. And I was saying to the guy I was with, I was like, I'd love to be the person who said, you know what, we should have an RV on our stand. And then someone else says, nah, you know, there's something missing. We need a helicopter on top of it.
Because this is a CES, presumably you can also control it from your phone like a moron.
Probably. The most ridiculous thing I saw was on the Panasonic stand. And a device called the Listener, like Flickr. And from the website, they say it's the baby voice recognition engine co-developed with Panasonic is able to differentiate four different categories of sound: crying, growling, laughing, and babbling. It's essentially designed for parents who are too inept to understand what their baby thinks, and they need a device to tell them what their baby is thinking right now. It is, without a doubt, completely fucking stupid.
The best thing about it, right, it's not even just that it distinguishes between the noises your baby makes so you don't have to. Because I can see some people, you know, I mean, yeah, Jono, you've got a child.
Yep.
Excuse me, sorry, so have I. And it is occasionally you think, are you happy or do you just need a dump? I'm not honestly not sure, right? But... the thing this does is not just that it distinguishes between them, but it enables a family to check their baby's emotions and voice by means of letters and icons. Here's an idea. Check your baby's emotions and voice by looking at your frigging baby, not your smartphone.
Right. For so one I presume, like, if your baby is in the dump category, your phone turns brown or something? Is this how this is meant to work?
Oh, my God. It just... I felt so bad for the poor girl who was demoing this thing, because she looked at... Like I said... This seems a bit random. And she looked at me as if to say, yep, I think it's stupid as well, but I have to, you know, this is the only way in which I was getting to Vegas. So there we have it. We have the news. If you have any thoughts,
I will
on the
add
news.
To this, that if you're a company listening and thinking about naming your product, this is not The Price is Right. Vowels do not cost money. Stop it with the ridiculous lack of vowels at the end with the er. Right. It grinds my gears.
It's maddening. Yeah.
Or should I say it grinds my gear?
I see what you did there.
And next week's prediction, since mine were conservative, we decided, you know, we needed some way of balancing that out. So what we're looking for is true insanity in the form of predictions. Cometh the hour, cometh the man. Step forward, Jono Bacon.
Now, I also didn't do very well last year with the predictions.
No.
I got So, you know, traditionally with these predictions, we, you know, there's a spirit of the prediction, then there's the way in which you can actually count it. And I'm not going to do a very good job on how we count some of these, all right? So, prediction number one. You can count this. Google will shut down Google Plus in 2017.
Actually shut it down?
They'll shut it down. I think that the notion of an account profile will still exist, you know, like associating different types of information with your Google account, but the actual social network, I think that they will put it this way. Let me clarify. I think they will announce in 2017 that plans to shut it down, but it may take them another year to actually shut it down, but they will start the process of shutting it down in 2017.
Interesting. I don't think that one's going to happen.
So official announcement. We're talking about here the thing where you can type stuff into a box and then it appears and other people can see it.
The social network where you can share posts, you can plus one them.
Do you think their brand can take them shuttering another high profile service? Because I don't think they can.
I think they can, because I think that Google are becoming increasingly more and more of a consumer company. And I think they care less about what technical people think, and technical people primarily seem to like Google Plus.
I don't even think technical people do now. It's tailed off an awful lot in the last 12 months only.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, it'll get headlines because it's Google shut down one more thing. But equally, it's Google shut down one more thing that we weren't using anyway to everyone who isn't us.
Right. Yeah, maybe. This is, yeah. I've already heard multiple non-technical people say they won't use new Google services because they keep shutting them down. And I'm not, and like right. I said, very non-technical people.
Right. I think, yeah, there is kind of an overriding thing of, yeah, don't get involved in new Google stuff because they'll kill it in 2 years anyway. But I don't think Plus would contribute to that more than any other Google thing they shut right. down would.
Well, I think the thing is as well is the major things that people tend to use, I'd say like the like real average Joe and Josephine, are things like Gmail, Google Search, Google Calendar, and Google Docs.
Right.
And they'll never shut those down. I think the things that they're closing down are typically on the, by definition, they're on the more niche side of things. Things like Reader. I mean, a lot of people used it, but I wouldn't say the general population used it.
Right.
Google Plus, popular, but not the general population using it. So I think that's the reason why they're, and I think the thing is as well, I'm sure that Google management are saying, you know, with a social network, the longer you keep it going, you know, the harder it's going to be to shut it down because more and more people, there are going to be people still joining and then they're going to have that shut down. You might as well just rip off the Band-Aid sort of thing. So that's prediction number one.
All right.
Okay.
That's obviously easy to assess if that's going to happen.
Unambiguous win condition.
Right. I have a couple here and I still haven't finalized what my next big one is going to be. Let's do this. This is going to be difficult for me to measure. I think 2017 is going to be the year of the electric car, in the sense of I think a significant number of new models will come out this year, including companies who haven't got an existing electric car model. But more specifically as well, I think Tesla will have a down year. So Tesla, everybody looks at as being like the bastion of the electric car, but they're also a company that hasn't traditionally operated in the car industry. And this is based on a conversation I actually had when I was in China with somebody, a guy I met in a bar, and he said he thinks Tesla's going to struggle because there are just practicalities of how you scale up an electric car operation that will depend on like years and years of running an auto company. So, but I'm not sure how we're going to measure this. I mean, we can look at how many new electric cars.
I could see Tesla having a down year because with everything going on with Solar City and they're building their Gigafactory, they have a lot of stumbling blocks that I could Tesla having a down year despite how good their technology seems plausible. The other
right.
bit of that, is there a legitimate, actual, reputable car company that doesn't already have an electric car story? I can't think of any.
No.
No, that's a good point.
Everyone's got at least something. So your definition of the year of the electric car can't be that people start coming out with electric cars. It's got to be people start
that's fair. That's
buying
fair. Maybe,
them.
Yeah, I think it's going to be primarily people buying. Like, it seems like companies have electric cars, but they're kind of the edge model in case someone wants one. I think across the board, companies will start selling electric cars more and more.
Right.
So I think this is more of a buyer demand sort of thing.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
I think 2017 will be the year that non-Teslas are for the first time ever not garbage.
Yep.
Because most of the right. most exactly. of the electric cars before would be like, yeah, buy this electric car. It gets 70 miles or something ridiculous like that. And it takes
and then they try
12
and say,
hours to charge or something.
It's for driving around the city, and the answer is no. You're just crap at batteries. Stop trying to turn it into a feature.
But now you see, the Chevy Bolt, and there's a couple other non-Teslas that have actual batteries that real people can drive.
Getting there somewhere. You could predict, for example, that a purely electric car might be in the top 10 in sales in a relevant market, but I predicted that in 2014 and got it right on the show. So what about then? Would you go so far as to say an electric car will be top 10? Well, where do you think the highest electric car will be in sales figures in the United States?
I don't know.
We're looking at it. I mean, because you think to yourself, well, of course it's going to be low. It takes time to build. But then something like the Prius didn't, right? The point is that the Prius, it became the trendy thing to buy and suddenly everyone had one. We're talking about properly electric cars here, not stupid hybrids.
Yeah.
Right.
The thing is, the crux of my prediction is not so much that electric cars are going to outsell other cars. It's more that right now, I think a handful of people in the US are buying electric cars. You know, like that whole technology adoption curve thing?
Yeah.
I think electric cars are in the left, far left quadrant right now, like the early innovators.
You think this is going to be the year they cross the chasm?
I think this is going to get us into the next quadrant, which has got the chasm inside of it. So I don't think it's going to get us over the chasm this year, but I think it's going to, the technology is going to, in the same way that in 2016, I'd say VR became a real thing that people actually legitimately care about. And that was evident at CES. VR was freaking everywhere. I think this is going to be the year when a lot of people are going to be, there's going to be a lot of electric car options, and there's going to be a lot of people going out and buying them.
Here is, one possible way of assessing this time next year, then, is if it happens, it ought to be fairly unambiguously true, right? We can look at it and go, yeah, yes, basically that happened.
I think we'll say the spirit of this prediction was, yeah, there's no doubt that happened.
Yeah, so if we end up in a big argument about whether it happened at all, didn't happen.
Even if we had, like, numbers, we'll argue about it anyway.
Yes, okay, no, give me that one. So 2017, year of the electric car.
So my bonus, I actually have two, and I'm not sure which one to choose.
Double bonus.
So I'm going to share both of them with you, and then I'm going to pick one.
Okay.
Bonus option number one is Google will create a follow-up to the Pixel phone that will resolve the issues that people identified in this one, and it will be a critical and commercial success.
Okay.
Like, I think it will be the phone that people wanted it to be.
Oh, I was going to say, that first part's not a prediction. That's just product iteration, which happens.
Yeah. There's no doubt that they'll release a Pixel, but I think it will be a critical and commercial success. It'll be what everybody wanted this Pixel to
be. Similar to, say, the S8, which will be coming out in that order of magnitude.
Timeline.
You think it will come? You think that will happen this year, and it will be one of the top three or four selling phones?
No, not in the year, because it's going to come out in October, right?
Right.
What I'm saying is that in the time period that is for the rest of the year, proportionally, it will be a hugely. First of all, it'll be a critical success with the people who are reviewing it. People will love it.
Okay.
A lot more than they love the existing Pixel, but then within that time period, it will be a commercial success.
So how about for an unambiguous win condition, why don't we go with in the top three selling phones in the quarter it comes out?
Yes, that seems fair.
Okay.
I'm not getting confident.
I think that should be your prediction, because I'm looking forward to you dying on your ass 12 months from now when that totally doesn't happen.
Second prediction option is that Facebook will launch a VR version of Facebook that looks like Second Life.
No, they won't. I was wrong. That should be your prediction, man. That's the wrongest thing I've heard in a very long time.
So you're saying I would be able to log into Facebook and walk around virtual Bacon's house or whatever.
It will be effectively a mixture of, it'll be like Second Life, and it will blend in bits of Pokemon Go. I think we're going to see more and more like virtual reality worlds.
Poking someone on Facebook will become virtually literal.
Right. Potentially. Yeah.
Wow. The dream of VRML finally comes to fruition. So Facebook becomes a cross between Facebook itself, Second Life, and X Tank. Okay.
Right. And I think it'll be a massive flop, but I think that they will release something like that. Like Sony did it with Sony PlayStation Home. You've got something called X Time, I think it is. And then Second Life, obviously, they're redoing a VR version of that. And I think Facebook will have something, and it will come out in this year.
Wow, I was wrong about wanting you to do the Pixel one so I'd watch you fail. I want you to do this so I can watch you fail.
You know what? I'm going to throw them both out there. I'll choose whichever one you guys want me to choose. Or I can do both.
I think we do both.
Let's do both. All right. That, at least on the upside, gives me more of a chance to win because there's more predictions. On the downside, probably going to extra lose. A lot of smack has been talked about sports utility vehicles, often coined SUVs. Big bulky bodies, boring interiors, a sloth-like acceleration. Such shit is invariably fair, but I have discovered a shining exception to the rule, the Cadillac XT5 Premium Luxury. Now, I know what you're thinking. Cadillac? That tired and dated epitaph of yesteryear American cool? Well, stay with me, listeners. One of our two cars was a Honda CR-V, impeccably reliable but very much the boring SUV I just mentioned, so we wanted an upgrade and something more luxurious. Our needs are fairly simple, top-notch safety ratings, a smooth ride, blind spot detection, rear camera, and enough room for Jack and his usual mound of crap. We test drove the Audi Q5 and Q7. We also drove a Lexus RX 350. We scoped out the Merc GLC and even the Tesla Model X. The Audis and Lexus were surprisingly underwhelming given the money. The Merc looked boring and the Tesla was way too expensive. Then we walked past the Caddy dealership. The Caddy XT5 is a sharp looking car. Sleek lines, distinctive grille, 20-inch wheels, and overall a lot more exciting and modern than the Audis, Lexus and Merc. Inside, the interior is sleek and in some ways minimal. 8-way driver and 6-way passenger power adjusted seats, wood trim, a huge sunroof, beautiful blue lighting accents, heated and cooled seats, heated steering wheel, and more. While it lacks the NORAD-style displays on the Audi Q7 and the Tesla, there is no shortage of toys here. Included is the Cadillac Q onboard system, but Android Auto and Apple CarPlay also work. Driver awareness with forward collision alert, following distance indicator, lane keep assist with lane departure warning, front pedestrian detection and front automatic braking are all included, as well as automatic parking assist. The Caddy also sports automatic wiper speed based upon rain, a 14-speaker Bose system, a memory package with two presets for power driver seat, outside mirrors and power tilt and telescoping steering column, heated and power adjustable outside mirrors with driver side auto dimming, and an automatic dimming rearview mirror. Phew. All of this results in a remarkably comfortable ride. The zone heating and cooling gets the car to the right temperature quickly, the adjustable seats support even the fussiest of drivers, and the entertainment system makes it a breeze to navigate, look up the weather, see traffic, play music, and take phone calls. Speaking of which, the Bluetooth system and the wider Bose system in general is incredible, with stunning, crystal clear calls and audio. Interestingly, this raft of features also feels practical. I've yet to find really many features that I consider to be extraneous, and while the heated steering wheel makes me feel like a bit of a sellout, it is rather nice. So, how does it actually drive? Wedged under the bonnet is a 3.6-litre V6 direct injection engine, which gets us from 0 to 60 in 6.3 seconds with a top speed of 125 miles an hour. Well, I don't really care about stats. The drive is remarkably smooth. We were expecting the Lexus to top the overall ride quality and smoothness, but the Caddy beat it hands down. The XT5 feels big and solid, yet zippy if you need to evade the police due to a pasty-related crime. So, what is the bad voltage verdict? If you're in the running for a luxury SUV to cart around your most precious of cargo, you can't go far wrong with the XT5. Well-built, rock-solid, quick, and with plenty of toys, it's all worth a test drive.
Man, you're just wrong the whole time about literally everything. It's unbelievable.
Is it because it's not
yellow? I don't think I could concur with Eck more on that.
What is wrong about it?
Right, okay, how long a list do you want? Let's start, right? This is a man who says to himself, right, we've got a boring SUV, which is a 4x4, by the way, if you're not in America. We've got a, except they're not four-wheel drive most of the time. So we've got a boring SUV. We don't want a boring SUV. Let's go shopping for another car. What's on our wish list? What's on our wish list is top-notch safety ratings, smooth ride, blind spot detection, and a rear camera. You do want a boring SUV. That's what
I
you
never
are.
No. What I said was, most SUVs are boring. I think that stands. What I'm saying is we wanted a cool SUV. I agree with you that SUVs are by definition quite boring.
Yes.
Because they're SUVs. You can't really have a car seat in the back of a car for a kid and it not be boring. But also, I watched you wedge yourself into your tiny yellow Fiat sports car, and we can't really do that.
So. I grant you some kind of middle ground is the bad idea, but when you say, I don't want a boring car, you should be looking for cars. So your Cadillac SUV, right? Does it have spinners? No. Does it have twin exhausts? No.
Spinners?
Does it have
a... Are you 17 years old?
Does it have a Ram air scoop? No. Right. Is it
lowered? No.
Please tell me that spinners boring. Are still a thing in Birmingham.
They're not still a thing, unfortunately.
I bet they are.
I really like spinners. I don't care what you say.
I can't wait to get to Birmingham and see like a Vauxhall Vectra roll by with spinners on. It's going to be my highlight of the entire trip.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be amazing.
Neon light underneath the bottom of it.
So moving on slightly, Mr. Bacon. I like the fact, you know, you say it's got the following things and then read out the brochure as far as I can tell. But let's look at these things, right? So you've got forward collision alert, which is a thing that goes beep. Following distance indicator, which is a thing that goes beep. Lane yep. keep assist, which is a thing that goes beep. Lane yep. departure warning, which is a thing that goes beep.
Beep.
And front yep. pedestrian detection, which is a thing that goes beep. And that's it.
Not really. So, for example, with a pedestrian detection, if it detects a pedestrian is walking across the street, it will automatically brake for you. And you may mock my safety features in this car, for us, it's really important. We, you know, I'd rather not run over a pedestrian, and I am a crap driver. Okay, so this is a car that saves me from myself.
So I'm genuinely curious on that. First, it's a good thing that you're not on a car show, because the fact that you expected a Lexus to be the top ride quality is astonishing. Because the Lexus always Why? Has the worst ride quality because they are terrible driving cars. But you
they
said,
have a pretty decent reputation for ride quality.
No, they don't.
Not with people that like cars, they don't. They have a reputation for being super
different.
Loose driving and terrible. Unless you're talking about the LFA, which is like $300,000, Lexus drive terribly.
That's not a normal car for people to have. It's a supercar. No. It doesn't look like a supercar.
Right.
But I mean,
I also frankly didn't want to be a Lexus person as well. That bothered me. But anyway, carry on.
But you said, because if you look at the cars you drove, like the Audi Q5 is way cheaper than the Cadillac. The Q7 is kind of close, a little less expensive. The Mercedes is actually less expensive. The Porsche Macan is in there. You should have test drove that, or maybe the BMW X3 or X5.
You can't own a Porsche SUV. You just can't. Everyone will think you're a twat.
I think the Cayenne is more the car you're thinking of. I'm interested in what specifically, like you said, the Q7 was underwhelming despite having a NORAD display and pretty much all the same features as the Buick. What, like sitting in the Q7 and sitting in the, or not the Buick, the Cadillac, they're both the same. What made you think, like, I want this Cadillac? Like, did you just want to be a caddy guy as if to say, like, fuck you, Britain, welcome to America, me, I'm getting a caddy?
No, honestly, I mean, the Q7 was the car from the research that Eric and I were doing, was the one that seemed like the most likely that we'd like, okay? We looked at the Lexus SUVs, they just seemed a bit boring and fairly expensive. The Q7... we like the look of, we realized in going out shopping that we really cared about a lot of the toys in the car, not like primarily the safety stuff, but also, you know, things like Bluetooth, like, you know, the Bluetooth so you can take phone calls, and things like Android Auto and Apple CarPlay working, all that kind of stuff. So we got into we actually drove the Q5 first, and we were completely underwhelmed by it because it seemed like pretty dated. And then we got into the Q7. The first thing we thought when we sat in the car was, holy crap, look at this. This looks incredible. So we were completely wowed by all of the gadgets and what was in there. Yeah. And then we drove it, and it was a lot bumpier and shakier and crapper than we expected. And we both went into it, I think, expecting to love it. And when we got into the Caddy, like we'd seen the Caddy previously, but we didn't drive it until after we'd driven these other cars. So when we drove it, we had the benefit of driving these other ones first, and we were blown away by how the Caddy just, we were expecting it to be cheaper and to be a bit crapper, but we're actually really blown away by the ride quality.
So. Well, but I suspect your definition of ride quality and, say, mine are different. Because, I mean, Cadillac, you know, back to the days when they still had fins on the back, were genuinely renowned for, if you, you know, when you went around a corner, it sort of wallowed around and bounces around the street like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man or whatever.
Yes.
And it's it is good to see that, you know, the Cadillacs of today, which your caddy's got a 3.6 litre engine and it does a top speed of a brutal 125 miles an hour. I don't know how much you get so small an amount of power out of an engine. It's not that it's not that you care about the top speed. It's that you could have put a 1.8 in it, used half as much petrol, and still had it gone as far.
I don't have numbers on the fuel economy. I have to say, so far, we've been really impressed with the fuel economy on the Caddy so far. Comparing it, for example, just to the CR-V.
They are good at toys, I have to say. Cadillacs they're good. When they did the, I can't remember the name of the one they came out with here. It was good at toys for a cheap rate. And the toys are the fun bit, largely. If you're driving around with Jackie in the back, then you're not looking to break any speed records, right?
Right.
No. You couldn't drive something like your new Caddy here in England because we have normal size roads rather than having a freeway outside everyone's house. So it wouldn't fit anywhere. But I've been to Walnut Creek. Well, you've got room for it.
Yeah.
So you might as well have 14-speaker system, you know?
The thing that surprised me the most about this, and part of the reason why I thought it would be an interesting review, is everyone's got their preconceived notions about brands, right? And our preconceived notion was the Lexus and the Audi are going to be pretty decent luxury cars. The Mercedes is going to be a decent luxury car, and the Caddy is going to be, it's going to be a, you know, it tried hard, but it's not, it didn't really like level up. And the thing that blew us both away, the toys is one thing, but you can put toys into cars, was really the quality of the workmanship in the car itself. Like it feels, one of the things that struck me about the Lexus, for example, is it felt plasticky. I mean, there was bits in it which I thought, we'll break this off. It felt genuinely plasticky. The Caddy feels like it's really high quality workmanship, but also just the way it drove. Like, I was not expecting that. And, you know, a lot of people have written Cadillac off and everybody, you know, and other car brands. And I was just surprised. That's it, you know, because you go into this with preconceived notions and it was different. So,
because you were expecting it to be a pound stretch of Porsche Cayenne and it wasn't.
Or I was expecting it to be more like a Honda, like a decent, reliable car that doesn't really have a lot of bite to it. And right. It's got a lot more bite to it than I expected.
Now, since we're a tech show, I have a tech question.
Yeah.
Yes.
I read the sign on the door when I came in. You mentioned very quickly in passing that it's got an entertainment system and navigation and all that kind of thing. Yeah, hooray.
Yes.
What's the deal with updating that, putting new data into it, pulling data out of the car if you want to?
So they have this thing called Q, and the car itself comes with like a mobile hotspot for a few months for free, whatever. I don't care about that. As far as I'm aware, we haven't tried this yet. You can basically hook it up to your home Wi-Fi and update it from there. What we saw as the main requirement, though, is we wanted to use Android Auto and Apple CarPlay. So if I plug my Pixel phone into the USB cord, then it effectively takes over the entertainment system. And I can use OK Google in there. It's got Google Maps and all that kind of stuff. So it fucking beeped. Did you hear that?
I did. Okay, literally Google.
Literally can't say okay, Google. Why does it beep every time I say okay, Google?
Because your phone is listening.
your phone is listening all the time.
Have you used Android Auto at all?
Yeah, and I've actually been fairly impressed with it. It's not bad. It's a bit bare bones.
I was not impressed. I thought it would do. From what I hear, Android Auto 2 is going to be a vastly improved experience.
Right. We haven't tried Apple CarPlay yet. I have to say, though, so Erica's got a Mercedes, and the in-car entertainment thing is the most bastardized piece of crap I've ever seen. Like, we explicitly didn't want to go for the Mercedes because you couldn't use Android Auto or Apple CarPlay in there, and you have to use their system, and it's so bad we wouldn't even consider
you
it.
You don't want to buy a Merc if what you care about is the internal technology.
No.
But unless you buy an S-Class, which you're not going to buy, right. All right. The internal tech. I remember when I had the red Merc?
Yes.
And I wanted a Bluetooth car kit for it. So I went to the Mercedes garage in the town and I said, I'd like a Bluetooth car kit. And they said, yeah, you don't want ours. And I said, why not? And they said, what you want to do is you want to go and fit an aftermarket one. I said, but surely Mercedes do one. He said, yeah, but it's £1,800. And I went, what? It's only a Bluetooth car kit I want. And he said, I told you you didn't want it. Catch you later, Bill.
Traditionally, the technology in Mercedes and BMW both has been lagging because that's just not an area they focused on. They're definitely improving in the most recent model years in that regard, but that traditionally has not been their strong suit.
Yeah. The Cadillac Q thing that they have got in there is actually pretty decent. You know, it's it operates a lot easier than anything I've seen before, and it's got the usual like navigation map. It's got navigation, weather. It's got all the different controls for the car. Obviously, I still prefer using Android Auto just because I just find it more consistent. But yeah, so there we have it. You know, if anyone wants to go out and buy a Cadillac, go ahead. I'd recommend it.
In the next episode, also stay tuned for John reviewing a smoking jacket and a Kangol hat.
And now in the third and final installment of our 2017 predictions, Stuart Langridge and I will become increasingly depressed by the fact that Jeremy actually does research and will predict things that will probably come true.
I did research. It doesn't mean I got it right, but I did do some.
I don't believe that for a second. Over to you, Mr. Garcia. What do you think?
What's going to happen? Prediction number one this year, because 2 years ago I got the most correct and had kind of regular predictions. Last year I tried to go big and guessed one I didn't even think would happen, and I still got the most correct. So I wasn't sure which angle to take, so I kind of did a little bit of...
Oh, so you're saying this was really hard because you're so good at this.
feel free to shoehorn in the fact that you've won 2 years on the bounce in as many times as you can.
To be fair, even a blind squirrel gets a nut every once in a while, so who knows? But I am going to blatantly rip off one of your guys' predictions from last year, because, interestingly, last year I definitely didn't think it was going to happen, and this year I'm pretty sure that it's going to, and it is a portion or all of Canonical will be sold.
Now, I was tempted by that as well.
I'm not sure if it will be all, but I think if you look at how certain sections of Canonical are clearly flailing and not doing very well and not living up to the vision that maybe Mark had, and other ones are doing very well and making money, I don't know that the company as it stands now just is very sustainable. It's too disjointed. Hang and on. Doesn't make a lot of sense.
Listen, can you hear that? Do you hear that?
No.
That's the sound of someone not immediately complaining about Canonical.
Goodness gracious me.
I thought we were listening for X computer humming again, but no.
We're not listening to my computer humming. My computer that hums is in the other room running Ubuntu.
I'm guessing it will likely be the cloud division that would be spun off, whether it's Microsoft or Amazon or maybe to X point Oracle could be because they're trying to get into cloud more. I don't know whom it will be. But it seems inevitable.
Now, that's interesting, because there are two ways you can go. I mean, assuming you were to divide Canonical into the profitable cloud half and the unprofitable under-resourced devices half, right? Your contention is they'd spin off the successful bit so it'd go somewhere else.
Well, if you want to actually get money for it, spinning off the bit that you will get money for makes more sense. I don't know who would buy the... I mean, you could maybe acquihire off the other bit.
Yeah. It's going to be an acquihire for the phone side.
Which could happen. I mean...
But at that point, you see, to my mind, then yes, you could do that. You take the cloud bit, which is making money and has got millions and millions and millions of people working with it and using it and so on. But at that point, it won't be Canonical who made a big success.
You know, I'm not sure if this is going to happen, because on one hand, the client devices division is now pretty, you know, there's a lot of focus on IoT, right? And that's snappy and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. So I think the phone is undoubtedly going to become less and less of a focus. And with the cloud side of things, so you could potentially have an acqui-hire, but I think Mark is going to want the client devices division really focused on the IoT side. But then, and also Canonical recently hired a guy called Mike Bell, who used to work at Jaguar to lead up the devices piece. Mm-hmm. But then on the other side, on the cloud side, I think Mark's valuation of the company is going to be way higher than an industry valuation, because I think he sees the potential there. And I don't think he's a guy who doesn't need to settle for money. So it might be less likely, because it's not like, you know, a schmuck who's got no money wanting to, you know, looks at $100 million valuation is like, hell yeah, I'll have some of that.
Right. The companies in that space, especially Oracle, have so much money though that we'll see.
Right. If it's going to be an acquisition, I think it will be a insane valuation if someone buys the cloud side, because I don't think Mark will take any less. So
I think 2017 we'll see either way. And then kind of dovetails nicely with X second one, in that mobile app installs will, for the first time basically ever, will decline in 2017 over previous years. And that's the app boom, I think, is over. I think people don't want apps. People don't want app stores anymore. I think they were handled poorly from the beginning, really. But I think definitively mobile app installs will be down across the board.
Yeah. The reason I'm hoping that the web thing makes this happen is because the alternative is that we get the sort of moral equivalent of app stores. It's just that it's the Facebook app store from which you get your AI chatbot, rather than the iOS app store from which you get your iOS app. Right. But we, as an open source, open data, privacy focused community, are still no better off. We've just changed the owner of the thumb. I'd like to fix that.
Wow. Yeah.
So I would agree with Jeremy's prediction there. I mean, I'd certainly like to see it happen, and I'd like to see it improve rather than just swap for someone else. But I was going to say,
interestingly, I don't know that it will improve the situation in that context, but I still think it's going to happen.
Yep. No. Fair play. What do you think? What do you think app stores will be replaced with?
I think you'll still have native app stores, but I think increasingly people will move to just text services, where you go to a site, or maybe the what would you call it? Service installers or whatever it is. Service workers. Sorry, might be a component of it, but I think just native web is going to be more of a story in 2017 on mobile than it was in the past.
Aha! Right. So we're going to see the web stuff come. You don't think it's all going to be it's all going to shift, so the place people play is Facebook Messenger and whatever. So it all becomes AI chatbots and messaging help and the stuff that Google are doing with Allo and Duo and all that.
I am not convinced that as a niche that market segment is going to ever go mainstream. Certainly not in 2017, but I think that might be a short-lived thing. The whole AI chatbot thing, I cannot see a situation where day-to-day people want to use that ever. At least given current technologies.
Apart from everybody using Siri and Amazon Echo, you mean?
So Amazon Echo, I consider it a totally different thing, because it's not on, mobile. In your house, I can see that being a huge market. I think Amazon Echo changed the game more than people realize now. I think it absolutely, utterly changed the game. And I would anticipate, this is not a prediction, I just, on a quick side note, I would anticipate maybe within, let's say, 2020, there's not a new home built that doesn't have that in the actual home. I would be shocked.
You know what's going to be, what's interesting to me is, I actually think that the AI assistant type thing is going to grow significantly in 2017. Just from, this is completely observational experience, and the fact that since I got the Pixel and I've been using Google Assistant, it works more often, a lot more often than it doesn't work. And each time it works, it's incredibly satisfying.
Right. So the ones built into the OS I can see growing. I'm talking about the AI chatbots that everyone's trying to chase, right, whether it be Facebook Messenger or Allo or all those things. I just don't see the point of that stuff. The ones that are built into iOS and Android, I think, are pretty good.
I actually think that people will keep downloading mobile apps, but the technology behind them will be web.
Okay.
So,
Ah, but, interesting. Okay.
And the bonus kicker.
Here we go.
Linux market
share.
Come on, Garcia. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Linux market share is going to break a full 5% in 2017.
Oh, now I thought about saying this and then I chickened out.
Desktop market share.
Correct. Oh, well, server market share is, I mean.
Yeah. I was going to say server market share is way bigger.
I predict server market share will break 6%.
Whose assessment are we doing this on?
I did think about that. That's one difficult thing. There's really no
ideal
place for this, but NetData is usually cited quite a bit.
Yeah. You've got, I think, three places you could look, and they have four, actually, now, very recently, and they've got different kind of vibes. It'd be interesting to see which one you think is most useful. You've got, Net Applications, who are the kind of traditional place you go for this. You've got the Wikimedia Stats. You've got Steam. And now, recently, we've seen a thing which is actually probably a better insight into the world's populace than all of these, which is Pornhub, who published their stats in a very nice... Yeah.
And they actually did a pretty good Linux thing.
And on the one hand, I mean, I see that as being, probably a more realistic slice of the world than everything else. I'm sure everyone else sees Linux being higher in that as just evidence that we're a bunch of wankers, obviously.
I will say, in at least one of them, if not two of them, Linux clearly crosses 5%.
Ooh,
I think it's a result of many things. Linux getting better on the desktop, things like Elementary actually focusing on the desktop. But B, I think we've hit that point where people are finally fed up with Macs, and they've dropped the ball now with hardware and with software. And I think that's where you'll see most of the people will not be coming from Windows. I think they'll be coming from Macs.
Not only have they dropped the ball, they are declining faster than the market.
Right.
The question you've got to ask yourself, though, is the degradation of the Mac enough of a reason for people to put up with the insufficiencies of Linux?
Well, there is...
I think we've reached that inflection Linux on the point, desktop, yes.
Right, because Linux on the desktop does not offer a lot of stuff that some people may use. Like,
it does not.
Like certain apps, right?
Many apps. But, yep.
Right, and that's going to be the interesting question.
I think for the average content consumer, that's not much of an issue. For the average content creator that isn't willing to put up with a lot of hardship, they won't be moving. The content creators are going to stick with Macs for the short term. But
it's interesting to me that you focused on Linux as opposed to Chromebook or Chrome OS sales going up.
I'm assuming we're not counting Chromebooks and Android here as Linux by this definition. This is what we'd call desktop Linux, right?
I would consider Chrome desktop Linux. Is there someone who doesn't?
Android's
definitely not.
You need a higher number then.
first of all, you need a higher number. And secondly, if they swapped it out for VXWorks tomorrow, not only would it invalidate your prediction, but no one would even know. It's just Chrome. If they shipped it with a Windows kernel, it wouldn't alter anything.
So we could do a segment on this if you'd like. So for the point of this prediction, I will say Linux desktop without Chrome. I do think Chrome OS is desktop Linux.
Ooh, interesting. Okay.
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair.
It will be because I agree with your point about the Mac and everything. I just think that the Linux desktops are declining at probably the same rate. And you will say this is more evidence of me just being miserable about technology, but this is actually the reason I'm miserable about technology at the moment, I think.
That's interesting you say that, because I actually think that they're going through a bit of a resurgence right now.
Wow, really? Okay.
But, that is a separate topic. Maybe we'll have Grumpy Stuart whines about Linux desktop and we try to... It can be the Stuart language therapy session.
You can. That would actually be genuinely useful, I think, so we'll do that on the next show, yes. So those Jeremy's predictions, thank you very much.
Yes.
We will come back in 12 months and see how we go on.
We will do. We will indeed. And as we ramble out of this show, I want to highlight something which I think is really cool. There is a chap called Martin Wimperess, who is a wonderful human being, and he has created a bad voltage channel for the Roku.
He has, absolutely. Nice. And he did this. He did it quite a while ago, and it went through assessment and everything. It has to be approved to be in the Roku store, and he's done it all himself. Brilliant job. So yes, if you've got a Roku, you can now just search for Bad Voltage and the channel pops up and you can subscribe to it and add it. We should also point out that the Ubuntu podcast have one as well, so you can subscribe to both while you're in there. But yes, you can now listen to Bad Voltage on your Roku. Thank you very much, Martin Mimpress.
Very nice.
Thank you, Martin. And if anyone else actually wants to create, you know, Bad Voltage clients for other platforms, we'd love to see that, obviously. We've actually been talking about it a little bit recently behind the scenes, just how we can get Bad Voltage out to more places. And we're talking about all kinds of different ideas. So the more you can help us get the word out and get the show into people's ears, the better. So, but Martin, you're a rock star.
Thanks, Martin.
Yes. Brilliant.
Thank you very much, Martin.
Is there anything else we need to touch on?
There is one other thing. As we mentioned in the intro, Mr. Bacon isn't very well. And
Yes.
He has bravely soldiered on throughout this show.
To be fair, though, you do not seem very sick.
Well, he claims to have a cold, but I think I've actually discovered what's wrong with him. Because today, Jonathan Bacon mentioned that he'd written a post about a 10-step framework to bring an open inner source methodology to your organization. So as far as I can tell, he's not got a cold. He's just allergic to bullshit, which is what that is.
It sounds like synergy to me.
It does. It does feel like you... reached... Now, what is it you need to reach, Jono?
I am massively transformed.
I don't remember.
Is it your massively transformational purpose, Mr. Bacon? Yes, it is.
You two are arseholes, by the way. So, look, what's happening in the industry is people are bringing open source principles inside of companies, right? I mean...
Yeah, definitely. There's no doubt about that.
And that is known as inner source. Source.com people asked me to write an article which provides a bit of a framework for how you do that. That's what I do in my business. So.
I have no problem with also, you know, some companies, sometimes they need to work together. And that's a good idea. You just don't have to call it synergy when you do that.
I literally never used the word synergy.
You did, however. Say a 10-step framework to bring an open inner source methodology to your organization. Since I've said all those words twice, someone has just checked off their bingo card twice and therefore wins two prizes.
Let's break this down, okay? My new post, right? I've created something new. It's a post. I'm sharing it. On a 10-step framework, right? So these are 10 things that you should do, and it's kind of a framework to do something, right? So I'm sharing that this is easy to use. This is something that you can follow to bring an open inner source methodology, right? Inner source is a methodology and it is open, okay? To your organization. You probably work for an organization. We're not bringing it to your gardening club, okay? Now, I believe that is the purpose of the English language, okay? It's to be clear about things.
Why didn't you take that advice then?
Yeah, I was going to say, words do have meaning for a reason, so we can all communicate. What you communicated there is not what I think you meant to communicate.
I'm looking through languages tweets now. All right.
No.
Well, OMG. You have a tweet that starts with OMG.
I don't.
Google Keep's UI is so annoying and slow. Worst example of overly GS stuff ever. Starting to think Neve, who doesn't spell her name right, by the way, it's Nima, and I need an alternative without a full stop at the end, right? You are one to talk, Mr. Language.
Perfectly clear is what that is.
Another one. TFW space BAE. That feeling when whatever the hell Bay is won't bring back the 146. What does that mean? What is that?
Your problem with that is that's a joke and you're not clever enough to get it.
All right. I'm being attacked by zombies.
I was.
You've turned into. I now know why you've been depressed for this entire show. It's because you've turned into a 15-year-old.
I'm getting down and keeping it real with the kids. Right, so.
No kid would ever say that. Okay, we should wrap it up. So.
This is very good. So, thank you for returning to show two, no, series two, episode one. Yes. This has been Bad Voltage.
Hang on, one more thing. We have to talk about the thing we're doing in Los Angeles.
Yeah, we do. I wasn't sure if we were bringing it up or not, but we probably should. I think.
Yes.
So we are going to be returning to the Southern California Linux Expo to do a live Bad Voltage show,
yes,
which will
we
work
are.
With audio and visual this time around.
Maybe.
It's going to be Friday the 3rd of March, 2017, in Pasadena. So be sure to get out to Scale.
Yep.
It's going to be a blast. So.
Yep. Scale is always a laugh. And I get to fly all the way to America, so that'll be fun. But yes, it'll be brilliant. We're doing a live show. Lots of other people there as well. Come along to Scale.
That's it. Yeah, just go along. It's going to be brilliant. We'll have some more information on badvoltage.org/live soon. So check it out. Bye, everyone.